got to dig a spoiling movement.
Yeah.
Brandon Collins.
That's me.
And Justin Brown for your moving needs. Medium popcorn.
Woo!
You haven't seen it, well, we're gonna spoil it.
Spoil it in your face.
That's your warning. So if you get pissed, it's all your fault.
What's up, my little dragons? This is Sensei Brown. And guys, I have a nice little interview with the director of the VR game, the Pirate Queen of Forgotten Legend, Eloise Singer. So you're about to jump into that.
Right? Hey guys, this is Justin with Medium Popcorn, and today I have a very wonderful guest. Her name is Eloise Singer. Eloise is actually the director of a brand new game called The Pirate Queen, a Forgotten Legend. It's a VR game, so you guys know how I love VR. And she's sitting right here with me for this interview in a cafe at South by Southwest, where you're also doing so much stuff. But Eloise, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So first of all, congratulations on your studio. Singer Studios. That's amazing. I'm a New Yorker, so you know, I know studios very well. I mean, I now live in a house, so that's, it's a little different. Hopefully you can elevate to that.
Hopefully I can elevate.
No, she has a studio, guys. Yeah. I'm just playing games. So, The Pirate Queen, a Forgotten Legend. This is about... is it a Chinese?
Yes.
A Chinese woman who married a pirate and then basically took over, after he died, probably in some terrible, terrible way.
Yeah.
Was it scurvy?
No, it wasn't scurvy. He died in a storm, mysteriously. So he kind of disappeared in this storm when they were going to Vietnam to fight some other pirates.
Wait, they were going to Vietnam?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's all in the South China Sea, right?
Okay.
So kind of that sort of area closer. And so he died in this storm. And it was quite a mysterious death. And there are many questions as to how and why he might have died.
So
Someone may have pushed him overboard.
Bada bing, bada boom,
Yeah.
Bing
Could
bong.
Could have been his wife.
Okay.
And as a result, she then became leader of the fleet and commanded about 70,000 men during the lead up to the Opium Wars and became the most powerful pirate of
all time. I'm
sorry,
did you say 17,000?
70,000 men.
70,000.
Yeah. It's the biggest pirate fleet in history.
That's insane.
Insane.
Well, especially, well, now mind you guys, this is not a story that's been made up. This is a historical story, historical game, rather. So not only are you just playing VR, but you're learning as well, which is, I don't like the learning part. Because I just want to play. I don't want to learn things.
But I think the thing that's so great about it is that you learn without realizing that you learn. That's pretty awesome.
That's the best way.
Yeah, right?
That's the best
way.
It's
like educational, but you don't even realize that you're being educated.
So basically what you're saying, you had to trick me into actually learning something new.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't like the fact of how sneaky you are, but I enjoy the fact that you're going there.
But you appreciate it at the same
time. Yes. Hold on. Let me actually turn off any sound because sounds are coming through my phone. Anyhow, so she had a fleet of 70,000 pirates, which is crazy because if you know the history of pirates, the way pirates came about is just kind of wild because they were part of, well, especially in the United States. A lot of the pirates were a part of like the British or Spanish fleets and things like that. And then they kind of just were left to their own volition. And they said, well, we're going to steal things. I imagine probably China very similar. So that's insane that she managed like all of those men.
Yeah.
So she must have been fierce.
She is a badass, yeah. And kind of scary, I'm going to be honest with you. She used to, like, chop off people's ears. She created a code of laws that meant that men and women on her fleet had to be treated equally, which was the first time that it ever sort of happened. And so she really did pave the way for gender equality, which was huge. But at the same time, it was, like, to the extreme, to the pirate extreme. So if a man acted outside wedlock, he would literally be, like, cast overboard. So it was full-on pirate rules.
Right. Okay. Do not mess with this young lady.
Do not mess with the Pirate Queen. She is a badass.
So, now mind you, like, I know you've done a ton of directing, not just video games, but film before. I mean, you worked on Ready Player One, you know, The Crown. Oh, there was another one that jumped into my head. But, you know, so you've done things outside. Like, what brought you to the video game world? And, like, how did you bring some of your work in other platforms to this?
Yeah, nice. So I started at Pinewood Studios. So as you say, I worked on Ready Player One. I didn't direct it. Steven Spielberg did. So, you know, just wanna clarify.
Just some guy. Just some guy. No one cares about him.
No one knows him, really. But yeah, so worked on The Crown, Ready Player One, sort of a lot of big Hollywood productions, Transformers, that sort of thing. And then I set up my own studio and started making independent films. So we made a film called Rare Beasts that we exec produced that premiered at South By here a couple of years ago, which was with Billy Piper and Lily James, which was really cool. And then I just made a film with Pierce Brosnan that went to Universal called The Last Rifleman. And I'm also...
Can I just stop you right there? So Pierce Brosnan, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a straight man. But if I decided to jump over, he may be one. Is he as charming in person as he is on screen?
Absolutely, yeah. He is. He's a wonderful human being. Truly wonderful.
I was introduced to him, you know, as a young kid. Not actually introduced to him, but like as a young, because I don't know, the man is probably better off for him.
On first
name terms. As, you know, 007, you know, things like that as a kid. And that's where I came to know him and, you know, and fell in love with his acting. And to tell you the truth, I thought he was British forever.
Right? So many people do. Yeah. So many people do. No one actually realizes that he's actually Irish.
Yeah, I was, then I'm just like, oh my God, you just blew my mind, which makes me even enjoy him more. But, you know, when I first saw Pierce Brosnan in your catalog, I was just like, I just need to ask her all about... I don't want to make this interview about Pierce. So, I don't want to make this about... I'm sorry,
but
you were saying.
Great.
Yes.
But he's great.
Good.
Yeah, and then basically we started developing The Pirate Queen as a film, but during the pandemic we couldn't keep developing it as a film. So I was like, okay, well, we have to tell this story. It's incredible, and this woman is amazing. Mm. So how are we going to do it? And I'd met the head of PlayStation Studios in London, a guy called Dave Ranyard. And so I called him up and I was like, Dave, do you want to make this into a game? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. That sounds awesome. So then we teamed up and started developing it into a game, and we got some funding, and we showed a kind of short version of the game at Raindance Film Festival, and we won at Raindance. And then we showed it to Meta, and Meta were like, this is fucking awesome. Like, this is incredible. And we were like, thanks. Kind of surprised.
Yeah.
Like, cool, I'm really pleased that you like it. And they were like, cool, we'll fund it to be the full version of the game. And we were like, okay, amazing. And then we were sort of off to the races, and we went through 18 months of development, and then we got into Tribeca, and then we took it out to Lucy Liu's team, and we said, Lucy, do you want to be involved with this? And so her team looked at it and said, yeah, this looks incredible. And then they came on board, and then we won Tribeca, and then now we just released it on MetaQuest. So.
See, I like how she just dropped it in there. And, you know, we won Tribeca, you know, something off to the side there. So Lucy Liu, like, well, so I guess, first of all, when you started developing the game, did you have an idea for, you know, the voice or the narrator of the Pirate Queen that you wanted to use for this? Was like Lucy Liu's like, was like something when you had the top of your mind, or were you just kind of just let's make this, or let's just start and we'll see who we can get as a rogue?
I think when we first started it, we were like, we would love to attach sort of an actress, like someone who's well known to be this part. Mm. And it was very much in that vein that we designed the story and we wrote the narrative. I mean, Lucy was always like a pipe dream. It was, you know, it was like, this is, I didn't think anyone really believed that it was going to happen. And then, you know, we took it out and the universe spoke to us. So it really was a dream come true. So.
Like, it's interesting because, you know, Lucy Liu, obviously, you know, her career, massive career, which is vast of so many different kinds of projects. I mean, from, you know, Oh my God.
Like Charlie's.
Charlie's Angel. Well, actually, did you have to deal with Charlie?
No.
Caught you off guard with that one. I caught you off guard with that one. You know, she has a massive, you know, catalog. She's done tons of different movies, like Kill Bill. That's actually one of my it's actually not my favorite role of hers, but like it's one of the ones I always remember her because I love like martial arts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But like,
but it's so diverse. I mean, you think about it, like Kill Bill, you have Lucky Number 11, you have like Kung Fu Panda. You know, you have such an array of roles and characters, and I think that's what makes.
And now
her
you have this.
So interesting, yeah. And now you have this, and what I love is that she's such a pioneer. Like she's at the forefront, and she's such an innovator, and she's not afraid to take creative risks and. I have so much respect for her, and for her, it was just she saw the story, and she was like, "We have to do this. Like, this is something that I resonate with, and this is something that I really want to do." And I think to have, you know, Lucy's an exec producer on The Pirate Queen as well as the lead, and so to be collaborating in that way as well is really it's really exciting. And I think, you know, we're the first VR game to be launching into a franchise. We're developing into a film with her, we're developing into a graphic novel, and that's never been done before. And I think for Lucy to be paving the way in that respect, like, is kind of extraordinary. And I think
it's awesome.
Yeah, it will, in my mind, I'm like, this will go down in some sort of like history as like one of the first VR games to, like, you know, break into a major franchise.
So in making this, well, actually, you know what, in preparing to come and speak to you, I watched the trailer and everything. Can you tell me, is the game kind of as scary as it looks in the trailer? Because it looks like it's something that may make me poop my pants. But is it scary, or is it just like the vibe? Because even with Lucy Liu's voiceover, especially, you know, what you guys clipped for the trailer, it does have a very ominous tone to it, which, you know, which is extremely captivating, obviously, with the visuals as well. But like, what can I expect out of this one? Because I'm going to play it, and I'm just going to let you know if I will send you a bill for dry cleaning if necessary. Okay?
I mean, I don't think you'll poop your pants.
Okay, fair enough.
We wanted to create a mood and we wanted to create a tone to it. And Lucy, you know, the Pirate Queen is a scary character, and we wanted to kind of bring that out. So Lucy's performance is darker, and that was so fun as well to kind of create that character and create this narrative. And sort of go through that creative process together was really enjoyable. And yeah, we created all the environments to be dark, and it's all set at night, and everything's supposed to be very immersive. And yeah, you're supposed to be going through the unknown, right? So that's part of it. But at the same time, we really wanted to make a game that wasn't violent, because we wanted to create something that was a little bit different. And there are so many VR games out there that do have swordplay and that are shooters, and I think those games are fantastic and there's a time and a place for them. But with this, we wanted, like, as many kids to learn about the Pirate Queen story as possible. And so for that, we wanted to make it as accessible.
So would you consider this more like a mystery game, like a puzzle type thing? Okay,
yeah.
so it's like Tomb Raider, but without the guns.
Yeah, exactly.
And without the booty shorts for no reason. You know, the sexualization of this character. All right.
Yeah,
so
it's an adventure narrative with puzzle elements. That's the best way to explain it. So,
and those games are extremely fun, and they're captivating just as much as a sword. So I played tons and tons of these different games. You know, my wife hates it, but regardless, that's besides the point. But like, this is definitely something right up my alley. Other than the fact is, it seems a little bit scary. And I will take off my headset and throw it to the floor. I've done it before. I'll do it again.
I love that. Well, let me know. When you play it, let me know what you think.
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
So with, you know, this game, like, what's next? Like, are you going to do more VR games? Are you going to stay in this genre? You're going right back to film and saying, I'll never again. Lucy was great to work with, but I can't. Like,
But I can't. So I've got a documentary that's called Inheritance that releases next month in the UK. So it comes out on Sky. We made it with XYZ Films and Library Films. Library are the guys who did sort of Fire Festival, Bad Vegan, Wham, Tiger King, that sort of stuff. So we're doing a three-part doc series with them that releases, which is exciting. And we only just announced it 2 weeks ago. It's been under the radar for the last 6 years. No one...
Nice.
Yeah, so that's really exciting.
Right here, exclusive. Medium Popcorn exclusive, guys.
Say
exclusive.
So, yeah, so I'm starting to kind of finally be able to talk about it, which is really exciting. And then...
Amazing.
We're developing the graphic novel of the Pirate Queen, so that's kind of the next step, and then we're just about to start developing
nice.
The film as well with Lucy, which is really cool. So, yeah,
okay.
there's a few things that are happening, not much. Not
you know,
much.
Just a little bit, no, just a little bit.
A little bit.
Okay, so you're talking to a ton of people who have no idea what this game is. Maybe some people who've never played a VR game before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Elevator pitch. Elevator
okay.
pitch. Pirate Queen, why should they flip on their VR headset, jump on stream or Meta Quest,
mm-hmm.
and just get this one going?
God, man, the pressure, honestly.
So much pressure. Listen, I'm not preparing you for anything. Go.
Go down. I mean, you get to step into the shoes of the Pirate Queen and listen to Lucy Liu's voice as you literally, like, outsmart rivals, row across treacherous water, scale the side of pirate ships, and become leader of the biggest fleet in history. Full stop. Mic drop.
AKA, why not?
Why the hell not?
Yeah, why aren't you playing right now?
Literally.
Especially because it
well.
Was released on March 7th, 2024,
yeah.
and it's available, so you should be playing right here at this moment. Actually, put this podcast down right now and start playing the Pirate Queen, the Forgotten Legends. Do you
Boom.
Feel like legends are really ever forgotten?
That's such a deep question.
I know.
Oh
see,
God.
I'm changing so many tones on you. I'm hitting you with ridiculous, silly jokes. I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to throw something random at you. Go on.
I love it. Yeah, I think they are. So, for example, we made a VR game that we premiered at Venice, and then we premiered at South
mm-hmm.
by, and it's called Mrs. Benz, and it's about the woman who stole an invention and went on the world's first road trip. And it's the origin story of the car, and it's the origin story of Mercedes-Benz. And no one knows that story, and I would define her as a legend. Like, she literally pioneered the automobile.
Wow.
And no one knows it. So, yeah, I think that legends are forgotten. Mainly women, I'm going to be honest.
True. Very true. You know, outside of video games and obviously movies, I'm a big car enthusiast. I worked
nice.
In cars for many years. So... I never heard about that. That's amazing.
Yeah, there you go. Mrs.
Now
Benz,
I'm going to have to do the research. And I have
yeah.
to come back to you for another interview about Mercedes-Benz.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have to run in there. We're going to say, we want her face on Mercedes-Benz. Every
Boom.
Single car.
Yeah.
Boom.
Boom. Bertha.
Wait, and what time frame was this?
1888.
Wow. So... therefore, we're going to have like one of those old-timey faces as well. You
mm-hmm.
know, with the dead eyes, which are extremely unsettling. Extremely unsettling on every single Mercedes-Benz car.
On all of them, basically. Just plastered all over.
Well, Eloise, I thank you for coming on Medium Popcorn.
Pleasure.
I thank you for your work on this video game and bringing this character, her story, this journey to life through VR and hopefully through...
film, graphic novel, taking over the world. Yeah.
Love it.
Great.
So I look forward to seeing more to it. And learning more about Mercedes-Benz as well, because you're
mm-hmm.
telling the stories that I need to hear.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, Eloise, before we get going, can you please tell our listeners how they can follow you, how they can keep up with everything that you're doing so they can, you know, learn more about, you know, awesome women throughout history and how you like to, you know, put the narrative, put their story out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Eloise.singer on Instagram. Instagram is kind of the main place that I'm at, but I'm also on Twitter. I'm also on TikTok. And then our studio is Singer Studios UK, and that's across all socials as well. So, yeah.
And guys, just so you know, it's not a studio apartment. It's a studios.
This is true. And one day I will upgrade to a house, but let's wait and
see.
Let's take it a day at a time.
All right, guys, this is Justin. You guys know you can follow me. Jay Brown did it on the socials. And, of course, follow the show, Medium P Podcast, on all the socials as well. Guys, we hold you. We love you. Get on the MetaQuest. And don't stab anybody, because this is not a violent game. This is a game about you learning about a quest. Peace.
So, as you guys heard, I had a nice time sitting down with Eloise Singer. But I also took some time and played the game. So I'm going to give you guys a little mini review of The Pirate Queen, A Forgotten Legend, you know, a game that is available, again, on MetaQuest as well as Stream. So, you know, I jumped on my my MetaQuest 2 to play this. Now, mind you, this is available for the MetaQuest 3 as well. I imagine it's just a little bit better. But, you know, on the 2, it was fine as far as I felt. Now, I will say I did not finish the game. You know, I played a little bit today. And I got to say, it's a really cool game. It's a really cool game. Like, you know, visually, you know, it's stunning. I feel like the story is well-paced. And like Eloise said in the interview that we had, you know, this isn't like a sword fighting game. It's more of a puzzle game and things like that. And with that, so, you know, it kind of does liken to like Tomb Raider without the guns, because, you know, it's like, all right, how do I get out of here? It's like, but, you know, you have to use the things around you, the things that you're equipped with. So, you know, you're picking up items, you know, to use later on. You do have like, I mean, there's different ways to play the game. There's one where like it'll give you kind of like, it'll give you layups throughout it. And then the other one is like, you're just like kind of playing, you know, as you go on. If you need help, you can kind of, you know, ring this little bell and then dude will kind of help you out. But I gotta say, like, it's actually a really fun game to play. Again, visually, it's really cool looking. And it, so when you start off, you're on, you know, this little, I don't even know, like, I guess a dock. And, you know, you get into, you know, a rowboat, and then you're rowing. And so I jump into a rowboat, and, you know, you're, you know, doing your thing. And what's really cool is you can actually go backwards. So it's like little things like that that they put in the game that really kind of adds a nice little touch to it. But like I really enjoyed as far as I've gone so far. I do wonder how long the game is, because this does take place from what this, you know, what it said in the game. It's like it seemed, you know, it takes place in one day. So I do wonder how long the actual game is. But from what I played, it's really cool, because, you know, the thing about VR is, you know, it is a fully immersive experience. But, you know, with this game being that, you know, you're on the sea and, you know, this is, you know, the settings, you know, this is, most things are lit by candlelight. And being that you're on a ship, it's not like the lightest place on the face of the earth. So, you know, it's not a super bright game, which does give it that kind of eerie tone that I was speaking to when I was speaking with Eloise. It's a fun play. It's really a fun play. So I'm gonna give you guys a little, you know, a little spoiler here. So if you're on the first level, and you know, you're gonna go, well, you know, in the first level, you know, kind of like the opening, you get in this room, and all of a sudden you realize like, oh, how do I get out of here, right? Just know you gotta raise this rug. Cause I was standing there, I'm just like, oh, well, there's clearly some sort of, cause you know, I'm searching the room. I'm just trying to find out, you know, what's what around here. So I find this door and I'm just like, okay. So I'm sitting there trying to access the door, cause I already figured out how to, you know, the combination, you know, because it's locked, how to get out of here, because I'm smart like that. So I already figured out the combination and everything. And I'm just like, all right, how do I get out of this thing? You have to raise this rug. Because if you don't raise the rug, even if you know the door's there, you can't access the door, the panel, to actually spin the lock and everything. So that's what I'm going to give you guys, a little gift from me to you, so you can get on your way. But again, I have not finished the game, so I can't sit here and say, give it like an overall, like, oh, this is the best game I ever played, and you're going to love every aspect of it, because I haven't completely gotten all the way there. But I will say that from what I've gotten so far, you know, I'm enjoying it. It does make you think. You have to kind of think outside the box. You're searching for things. You're walking around the room. And, you know, unfortunately, I just haven't had the time to actually sit down and play the way I wanted to, because I got two damn children. But it is a nice little escape, you know, from, you know, the world of being a parent. But, guys, I would definitely check this thing out. Again, it is on your Meta Quest, whether it be the 2 or the 3, or if you're on stream, it's available on the stream as well. I'm pretty sure there are some people out there that can give you a little bit more in-depth into the game and how much they love it and the little nuances and whatnot. But this is like kind of my first take on it. Pretty dope. Pretty dope, and again, is a very, very beautiful looking game. I do enjoy the narration from Lucy Liu. Actually, so it opens where you open a scroll, and the scroll is going to give you the backstory of the Pirate Queen and everything. And I think that's like a nice little touch. And you know, a lot, and that is narrated by Lucy Liu as well. So narratively, it flows very well with the game. And you know, I've seen so far, there's not much interaction with other characters at this point, which is fine. But I do wonder, like, all right, how much, because it's not, you know, like a sword fighting game or anything like that, how much interaction you're going to have with other characters, you know, outside of, you know, the dude who you ring the bell and talk to, and like, you know, somebody may, you know, you may hear a voice here and there. So I just kind of wonder, like, you know, where is the full scope of the game, where it's going, which I'm just looking forward to checking out. Guys, I'm gonna give it a rating from what I've played so far and what I guess I suspect what's coming along the way. So you guys know how we rate things. We rate things bags of popcorn, small, medium, large, and the XL for the exceptional. If a film or a game doesn't deserve any freshly minted popcorn, it's stale popcorn, guys, and you could just throw into piles of stale popcorn that you'll never eat, which will go into a landfill. Don't let your popcorn go stale. So, guys, I'm going to give it a large. And while, yes, I love a good adventure game, and, you know, I play some puzzles here and there. This did kind of take me back to the days of playing more of the... Actually, this reminded me of the puzzle aspects of, like, the Arkham games. You know what I'm saying? Where he's like, okay, you need to get this key to be able to, you know, to get here or do that. It's like, all right, let's search this room. Let's figure it out. And it's not necessarily because, you know, you're dealing with pirates and things like that. You know, these dudes used to hide everything off, you know, just to get like a nickel of gold. You know, things were well hidden, and you had to take a few steps to get the place that you needed to get. So it was very reminiscent of those aspects, puzzles that you find in other games, which I've always enjoyed, because when you solve a puzzle, you do feel smart, you know? And I'm a dumbass, so... I'm typically a dumbass in my regular life, so these are my opportunities to feel like an intellectual. Guys, I'm going to give this one a large from what I've played so far. You know, I'm definitely enjoying it, and I think that you'd enjoy it as well. So go and check it out, download it, play it, enjoy it, and of course, follow the podcast. Follow me first. Jay Brown did it on all the socials. You can follow Eloise Singer, Eloise.Singer on the gram. But you can follow the show at Medium P Podcast. And you can show us some love on Patreon, patreon.com/mediumpopcorn. We have $2, $5, $10, and $15 packages where you guys can show your love, show your appreciation for Medium Popcorn, and you get so many extras. Why are you not on Patreon already? All right, guys, that's my time. I love you. I hold you. And then I marry you, and you're going to go missing. And now I'm manning the crew, baby. The boys are back in town.
Ooh, baby. I know you loved it. Well, guess what? I got something even more for you to love, and that is the review of Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. Now, also be sure to pop over to our YouTube page, because over there I actually have an interview with the producers of the film. Guys, check it out.
Medium Popcorn.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Medium Popcorn, and you are talking to Justin right now. And today I'm going to be giving you a review of the new Hulu documentary that's going to land on Hulu on March 21st. It's a Thursday. It's actually next Thursday, so set your clocks, baby. Called Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. So this documentary, like I said, 21st of March, is a documentary about the Freaknik. And if you don't know what the Freaknik is, watch the documentary. You'll learn all about it. But to give you a short synopsis, Freaknik was kind of like an annual festival, or one might call it Black Spring Break. You know, this happened in Atlanta. It started in 1983 and went to about like 1999 when it was eventually shut down. It was a little bit different than some of the other festivals and things like that that's come before and after it, because it was really one of those word of mouth things. First of all, I had an interview with some of the people that were behind bringing this documentary to the streets. And if you want to watch that interview, you can actually find that over on the Medium Popcorn YouTube page. So go check that out there. And I was talking to them about how this feels kind of like Facebook, like the beginning of Facebook, in the sense that it started as a thing where it was for college kids, and college kids knew about it, and then slowly it started branching out. And as it branched out, it got a little crazy. Now everybody's, you know, down there. You got 40 fucking 50-year-old people showing up at the Freaknik. And again, much like Facebook. It's very interesting, and I got to say that this documentary is very interesting because it did something that, like, a lot of the other, documentaries or just media that covered the Freaknik didn't do, which is it actually went into a lot of the roots of Freakniks and where it came from and everything like that. So basically, this was started by the HBCUs down in Atlanta, which is, you know, historically Black colleges and universities, as basically like a spring picnic for those kids who couldn't get back home to wherever they're originally from. So, like, what are you going to do when you're just on campus? You know, all the white kids go down to Daytona Beach, or, you know, freaking the panhandle of Florida or something like that. And, you know, Black people didn't feel like they had a space there or a place. And, I remember when I was in college, I didn't go to those spring breaks because I never felt safe there.
You know what I'm saying? It didn't feel like it was. It didn't feel like it was a place for me. So that's what the Freaknik was. You know, it started with 50 college students just meeting up for a big picnic, and just like hanging out. Now it's like, but why Freaknik though? We have some freaky shit. Who's popping ass out there? Wasn't like that, because the actual name came from the song Les Freak, and then they just put Nick at the end of it for a picnic. So Freak Picnic, Freaknik. Look at that. And it just kind of grew from there. So much like I was saying earlier, this became a word of mouth thing. And over time, it just kept on growing and growing and growing until eventually it was just the thing that everyone was doing. All the black folks were doing for spring break. Now, mind you, like, this spread across the country, so people were flying in from L.A., New York, Chicago, Detroit, all to come to the Freaknik. Some of them were driving in from wherever they were, and not only was this just like college kids, you know, at its height, you know, when it hit in the 90s, you know, you started having like celebrities were there. It was just it was just the black ass place to be, you know, and that's the thing about this documentary. It really explored a lot of the stuff that were going on with the Freaknik. I never knew. I knew that it was a big party, but I never knew exactly, you know, where it came from, you know, like, and also the intensity that it started to pick up, you know, with its massive following. So this doc is actually executively produced by a few names like Uncle Luke, which is kind of like synonymous with the word freak. So, you know, he had to be a part of this, because actually he filmed a video down at the Freaknik, which kind of, you know, again, blew it up even more. Jermaine Dupri. And then also 21 Savage. Now, 21 Savage, that one was kind of weird, because I believe he's like born in like 93 or something like that. So I was kind of just like, why are we talking to this dude? He's 31. No, okay, he was born October 1992. So when the Freaknik was done, he was 7 years old. Why what you got to talk about? I mean, I guess I get it, because you know, obviously he's, you know, a very relevant artist to today, and then you're going to bring in some people, you know, some of the today's youth and things like that. And I guess just his face, appearing in it, you know, you'll get some residual people that's sort of like, oh, what does 21 Savage have to talk about in this documentary? But at the same time, it's like, listen, I'm 40 years old. I never got an opportunity to go to the Freaknik because, you know, by the time I was just in high school when this thing got shut down. And this guy was 7 years old, so I don't know why he's there, but I mean, I guess, I find it a little bit weird. It's a very interesting doc because, you know, speaking to the creators, they mentioned, it's like, you know, this is, you know, a lot about the music. It's not just about the culture. But I feel like we all focus on the culture as opposed to the music, because it just seemed like this was such a cultural event because, you know, this was like, you know, a black space, you know, for black people, for young black kids to go down there and enjoy themselves and whatnot. And like, I don't think we think about the music with it, because, you know, this festival was all over the city. Like, and a lot of it was like, you know, the parking lot pimping, which is something that they spoke about in this, because like Jalen Rose spoke about how they drove down. They drove down from Michigan because he was in college, you know, Fab Five. And they basically, you know, people would like sleep in their car and just like, you know, chill out and just bullshit because, you know, a part of it was like showing off your cars, you know, your new rims and things like that. Which then brought me to a thing that they spoke called the rim shop. Now, This is something I've never heard of. So the Rim Shop was a space that was, I think they said Eric Sermon. If you know who Eric Sermon is, look him up. You know, rapper from back in the day. That he had, where you know you go there, get your rims, you know, and whatnot, and just chill out. But it seemed to be like the place where all of like Black Hollywood, you know, the music, you know, Black music musicians would all go there and just like chill out, you know, make music, just you know, bullshit, and just like enjoy themselves, which is I think is fascinating. And I'd love to see a documentary about that. But this also highlighted the fact it's like this began the rise of the Southern hip hop artists because of the fact that you had all these people, these young people who are, you know, the movers and shakers of the music industry, you know, because, you know, hip hop is, you know, what's hot. And, you know, the teenagers, the college students are going to make something hot or not. And as they're converging on this area, you know, you had Jermaine Dupri, and he's and you know he's pushing out some of his artists, and you know basically handing out tapes, and that's where like Outkast really came from. So they had their mixtape, which you know we're talking mixtape, we're talking cassette tape, and passing it out to people, you know, kind of like a sample. And that just became the thing. It's like it just started blowing up, and that's what blew Outkast up, and that's why Outkast became the group that they are, you know, today. Well, not necessarily today, but they became the cultural freaking monster that they were because it started at the Freaknik. So while the radio waves were dominated by, you know, the West Coast, the East Coast, you know, New York and, you know, LA, you know, the Freaknik being in Atlanta allowed the Southern artists to actually be able to get their music played or just get their music into the ear of the masses, which then took those, you know, tapes and then took them back home with them. And then boom, the music starts to spread like wildfire. So Outkast was, you know, a big name before they became a big name. You know what I'm saying? And it's, again, it was so organic. And like, these are the things that you learn in this documentary, which is really cool, which just shows why why the Freaknik was so important for that time frame, especially just, you know, for hip hop alone, because this was a way into the industry for a whole group. A whole section of the country, which really wasn't being heard at that time. Now, you know, obviously, you know, if you know anything about, you know, this event, you know that there were some wild things that started to go on. It became, you know, booty shaking and all that. You know, this is before twerking was a thing. And, you know, things started to get a little out of control, you know, towards, you know, the tail end of it, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it started with college kids, and then it started to branch out to just like, hey, this is just a place to be, and everybody's going, and you got 40-year-old, 50-year-old men just showing up to this thing, but the intentions of just having fun and enjoying themselves weren't necessarily there. And, you know, they saw Freak, they saw Uncle Luke, and they're just like, oh, this is where we go and rope women, or, you know, do some wild stuff. And, you know, obviously that stuff started, you know, to seep in, which is, listen, when it comes down to it, you have a huge gathering of people, there are going to be people there who's going to take advantage. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm saying that there is an inevitability of some bullshit going on when you have, you know, people trying to have a good time, and then you have some people just trying to take advantage of that good time. And especially when you're talking about college kids, you have people who coming in and taking advantage of maybe a naivety, Yeah. So it's which that, you know, also playing that playing a factor along with like the 1996 Olympics being held down in Atlanta and the city wanting to kind of clean up the city, you know, to put its best foot forward for the Olympics on its way in. And, you know, and just kind of like, because the festival is a little bit more disorganized, you know, that kind of, those factors, you know, together kind of brought the end of the Freaknik, which is funny because I remember hearing about the Freaknik when I was in freaking, you know, middle school and high school. And we're just like, yo, when I go to college, we are going to the Freaknik. But again, never happened because I graduated high school in 2002. So by the time I went to college, it wasn't a thing anymore. So again, now you're right back to MTV Spring Break happening in, you know, wherever in Florida and wherever else they were doing it. And it just wasn't the same. And it just didn't feel like my kind of party. but I got to say, like, I enjoyed watching this documentary and just like hearing from like you know, some of the artists that are part of it. Actually, and then some people who were down there, you know, just enjoying themselves and whatnot. And it really took me back to a point in the 90s. And like, yes, I was young then, but like the 90s were different, man. You know, it was a different it was a different era. And, you know, growing up in New York, you know, obviously New York to the South, especially in the 90s, it's, you know, it was very different. It was a different country. Well, the whole country is different at that point. But the Freaknik, it kind of exemplifies, you know, kind of just like a really black event, which, you know, because New York is a melting pot, like I never experienced, because, you know, there was always a few white faces, you know, or more than white, because, you know, that's where the money was, for the most part, because, you know, and also, you know, too many black faces, here comes the police, blick, blick, you know, but this documentary just highlighted a time that I wish I was a part of. I know that the Freaknik, and also spoken about in the doc, there was a revival that happened in 2019, where they, you know, made it into more like a music festival and everything by a guy. And you know, it's never going to be the same thing. I don't think you can do that festival, you know, the same way. But this is something that kind of lives in a time capsule, lives in infamy. And I don't think should be forgotten, especially because like, this is one of the few times black people got to have space to kind of do their own thing and just, you know, enjoy it, you know, their blackness. But I gotta say, like, I really enjoyed the documentary. Like, I felt like I learned a lot, especially, you know, timelines all lined up with just like the explosion of the Southern rap artists coming out, and just like the way hip hop was like just really changing and shifting at that time. So like, if you were around in the 90s and, you know, of age, like, you know about this, and you can see how much this really played into the full scope of, you know, where we were, you know, at that time. And I think the documentary very much captured that feeling. And you know, I thought, and like, again, they got, you know, the camera don't lie. So that footage that they had out there, oh, some people's out on Front Street. I mean, to be totally honest, there was nothing really, you know, too terrible. I mean, obviously the videos that, you know, probably someone was like, show me that video. Yeah, they ain't going to show you. It's not in this documentary. That has to be the Freaknik after, that's Hulu After Dark. if you want to see that kind of stuff. This was a good one. This is a good one because, you know, outside of documentaries like this, you know, we don't get to know about this stuff, especially if you're a younger generation. You may never knew that the Freaknik actually was a thing. So I would say definitely go and check this out. A shout out to, you know, all the executive producers that worked on this, all the people that just kind of, you know, popped in and, you know, gave their piece on, you know, what was going on at that time and everything. But this is a good one. This is a good one. I enjoyed this documentary. I think you would enjoy it too.
So that's why I'm going to give Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, a large popcorn.
So guys, you know how you can do it. You can follow me at Jay Brown Did It on the socials, but you can also follow the show at Medium P Popcorn. Medium P Podcast on the socials, and join us on Patreon, patreon.com/mediumpopcorn. We have $2, $5, $10, and $15 packages. Our entire backlog is on Patreon. And so if you want to see more Medium Popcorn Patreon, where it's at, and of course, you're here on Hulu. You're here on YouTube. So, you know, subscribe to a YouTube page so you can see more content here as well. All right, guys. Appreciate you. Peace.
Medium Popcorn. We are two niggas spoiling movements.
Yeah.
Brandon Collins.
That's me.
And Justin Brown for your moving needs. Medium Popcorn.
Woo!
You haven't seen it, well, we're gonna spoil it.
Spoil it in your face.
That's your warning. So if